Hello?
Well, hey, welcome everybody. This is Dave Krueger. I'm excited about our venture here and what we're about to do. First, I appreciate very much those of you who have sent responses to the two questions of what would you most like to get out of, what's the biggest question you have about this topic, and walking away 4 weeks from now, what would make this one of the best seminar series ever for this specific topic. Notice how those are the two questions, those of you who have trained at CTA, and I assume that's almost everyone, that is part of the simple coaching model. What do you want us to focus on, and what would you like to take away? So that's adaptable also for something like this, and I really appreciate your responses. They help me get an idea of how to shape some of the discussion and what we cover. So I appreciate that, and keep those emails coming, those of you who haven't responded to those two questions. So would anybody like to check in and say hey and respond to either of those right now before we start? I will reserve a portion of our discussion, like a few minutes at the beginning and a few minutes at the end, for us to have a discussion, clarification, things that are more immediately applicable, or at least to clarify at the end of the seminar. And the seminars will be recorded and they'll be posted at the ports, at the link that you have. So anybody want to add or ask anything at this point about what we're going to be talking about?
Can I actually ask a question?
If you say your name first.
Okay, so this is all right. This is Valerie, and I think I was having some troubles with the registration because I had to actually call CCA to find out if I was still registered for this class because I hadn't gotten anything.
I have you down. I'm sorry you didn't get anything. That's why I sent the email. Can I get a management of the background noise? If you shuffle or move about or even move paper, it'll be picked up by your microphone. You may not hear it, but we all hear it. So if you're not about ready to speak, if you would mute *6 and then *6 again to unmute when you're ready to speak. Valerie, sorry to interrupt you.
No, that's okay.
You must have gotten it somehow.
Yeah, I got the nuts and bolts. I got the registration for with the call-in number today, but I don't see an email with questions. So I just want to make sure I'm not doing something
that
wrong.
That was sent by me, a blind copy to everyone as a group email with two questions. Your last name starts with L, right?
No.
Oh, okay. You do not have it then. Did you register late?
No, I registered on January 18th.
Okay. I'll double check. Send me an email, dkruger at mentorpath.com, and I'll send that to you. So thanks for checking on that.
Yeah, did you say D as in David Kruger?
D as in David, K-R-U-E-G-E-R at mentorpath, mentorpath.com.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Super. Others, questions, things you'd like to be sure we cover? Anyone?
I guess my name is Katie, and I did email you and answer the questions.
Okay.
My sort of concern is that I'm not sure if everybody on the call has an idea of what they really want to focus their book on, and sort of I was signing up on this to get a better sense of, like, what would be the best avenue to go in, and I'm just wondering if this course will help me answer that question.
The best focus and the best avenue for what specifically?
So I have an idea of, like, sort of what the topic falls into, but I'm not quite sure of the actual, like, angle.
Okay, let me ask you to be very specific with me and focus on my question. What do you want to focus on? What's your objective? Is it a book, an article, enlightenment? What's your objective?
My objective is to write a book.
Okay, then you're at the right place. And we will talk about that. And there are four, as you may have seen from the app, be sure and download and print the outline because it's a fairly annotated outline and you won't have to take a bunch of notes, but you'll see we will develop this over four seminars, the art, the craft, the science, and the business of telling and selling your story, those components in that order. So this is about creating a systematic way to go about writing a book. Those of you who have worked with me before, and I see some familiar names, and I know some of you are from another training, you've heard me say many times, if you really want to change and accomplish something significant, don't just focus on the goal, focus on the system. That's what we do in coaching, is to help someone create a system, a map, because that tells you where you are, where you want to go, how to measure progress, and specifically, what's detour and distraction. Because the beauty of a map as well as a focus is all the stuff you don't have to pay attention to. So, and that's why I would like, and you've seen this in the email, but I specifically would like you right now to take a moment and write down the title of the book you intend to write. Don't hesitate. It's just a working draft. Write a title. So, you are already in the process of writing a book. We're going to elaborate about that and look at how to do that. And there are, in the outline with workbook exercises, there are some exercises and work tools that parallel the four seminars that we're doing to serve as prompts and catalyst to do that work between our seminars so that you can use those tools to help prompt your work. And I would suggest to do them before the seminar. In other words, the ones for the first seminar, if you can do them before the seminar, and the seminar then will perhaps make more sense, and then you can add your experience or ask about it in our discussion time. So any other questions, any other comments or additions to our discussion to begin?
Yes, David, I have one. My name is Benita.
Go ahead, please.
My question is, I have successfully written 5 books already, and I find that when I write a book for myself, I'm able to do it relatively quickly, but my goal is to be able to be a ghostwriter and help other people craft their books. And so I'm kind of looking for, like you use the word systematic, I'm looking for a systematic system to be able to do that a lot quicker. So that's what I'm looking for.
Well, you have a double task then, and I believe what we're going to be talking about, especially in the craft section, the second seminar, will give you some good guidelines about how you interface with the person you're writing for, because you're going to have to get them organized as well as do it yourself. You're going to have to lead the way. So especially to create and share and work collaboratively in a system will be a way to think about doing this in conjunction with someone else, because you know, we're hardwired to have conversations, to free associate. We're not hardwired to organize things. We're not hardwired to ask a simple, specific question as we do in coaching and then stop and let the client then respond. So it will take a systematic way of going about that to overcome a natural tendency. A natural tendency, remember, as coaches initially to want to give advice and to, tell somebody how to solve a problem or what to do. That's easy, because, and that's probably what each of you have been doing forever. But that brings closure without resolution. The closure is for you and the client. Both you and the client want you to solve a problem and move on, because it ends dissonance. It ends discomfort in the mind and brain. But it also ends inquiry and creating something new or different and staying with the challenge to get in a creative space of a different way of looking at it, to create a new story. So you're doing that collaboratively with someone. Each of you are doing it in conjunction with your experience. So there's a very important parallel there. So I'm glad you mentioned that. That's interesting. Anyone else before we launch into our the lecture. I'll put us on lecture so you don't have to worry about background noise and that sort of thing. But any other questions or additions? Yes.
Hi. My name is also Benita, and this is my first book that I'm writing. And I'm just anxious to see the format and structure of beginning to end, and as well as content. So I'm eager to just learn all that I can right now so that I can make this book successful and prayerfully a number one seller.
That's great. Are you Benita T or Benita S?
Benita S.
S, okay. All right. Super. Well, that's a very worthy goal, and I also think you're at the right place. We'll talk about the fundamentals of that. Anyone else, just briefly before we begin? Thank you. Yes.
Hi. Hi, everyone. My name's Nicole Kay from Cleveland, and My three objectives I wrote down before we started tonight for authoring my first book are how to pick a category. I think the story that I am planning to tell can fit into a couple different categories, so I'd like to understand best practices for selection and, you know, success criteria, as well as publishing paths, self-publishing versus having a third party, and how that process works. And the third one, I think you're covering with your system, which is a work plan to get it done in a reasonable period of time. Thank you.
Okay, great. We have one seminar to answer about the publishing that will be included in the business aspects, and the work plan will be in the craft. And I can answer your first question right now in a sentence. Your best category of what you want and need to work on. Here's one way of thinking about it. Write about what you most want to learn. That way you benefit, you're excited, it has application, and the benefit is immediate. And there is absolutely no question about the motivation, because it's intrinsic. It's you learning and wanting to know what's next. And the benefit is for you and for everyone who may read, including clients and others who you benefit by providing information and perhaps initiation of discussion, if you do that, beginning with a blog or a podcast or some other form like that. So, great question. I think we'll have time at the end. I'm going to put us on lecture mode so that we're off and running. Okay. It's been said that just about every smart, sensitive person has a desire to write a book, because writing is a really natural way for a contemporary person to learn, express, integrate, really feel alive. More than 80% of adults in America say they want to publish. Barely 1% actually do. And this includes articles, editorials, self-published books, as well as other kinds of publication. So first, decide if you have a message or a book. A message might be a blog series, an article, a white paper. A message is a written or spoken communication of an idea or point of view. An article can convey a message. A short series of blog posts can succinctly spread even a complex message. A nonfiction book builds a case, develops and illustrates a theme. The book needs a story to hold its richness, or a series of stories. It carries the reader along a course of reason, illustrating the applications. The story evolves an argument with complexity and depth. Now, the irony, as Seth Godin points out, the market demands that you summarize your book in a blog post. Traditional advice has been to write about what you know. And as you just heard, my other more exciting creative possibility, write to see what you have to say. Write about what you most want to learn or need. Here's an illustration of this. This is at a conference several years ago when I was still practicing psychoanalysis. I was talking with a buddy who was an excellent clinician. As we discussed the paper just presented, I asked when he was going to write a paper. He said, well, I'm going to wait until I'm sure I have something to say. I knew at that moment that he would never present a paper at that or any other conference. And those of you who have trained or mentored with me know that not knowing anything has never stopped me from talking. So we're going to discuss how to write in a systematic, structured way for effective and successful results. We'll talk about what happens next when you schedule an appointment or a series of appointments with yourself to write. We'll discuss, as I mentioned, the art, the craft, the science, and the business of authoring your book. In short, how to tell and sell your story. So first, commitment. A prerequisite is a commitment and a game plan. Now, make sure your commitment and your game plan match. You know the words of somebody who is not totally committed. I'll try, I should, I ought to, I want to, versus the words of someone committed. I will. You have probably addressed this many times as a client at the end of a session when you ask what they want to do to get traction in this area and do before you meet again. When they began with, well, I need to, I should, I ought to, you've helped them most likely move to a commitment of the I will. And since SMART goals have a T on the end, a time frame and what they can do to shrink the change in the next week when until you meet again, if you meet on a weekly basis. In fact, one of the great philosophers of the 20th century said, try not, do or do not. There is no try. That was Yoda in The Empire Strikes Back. And here's the Texas version of the difference between a 99% commitment and a 100% commitment. Seems so little. A fish has no use for a lake that has water 99% of the time. USA Today did a study on people who made New Year's resolutions. If I do reference anything, I'll get a little bit more on the scientific end of the spectrum than USA Today. But this has a point I wanted to share with you. They saw two groups. Those who made a New Year's resolution and wrote it down, and those who made one but didn't write it down. Those who did write it down, those who did not write their goal, 4% kept the resolution. Those who wrote it, 44% kept it. They put it in an output channel. Some of you who are training with me have heard the simplest study on this is the University of Waterloo. Two matched group of people read the same passage in a book. One group read it out loud. One group read it silently. They did a test. The ones who read it out loud did 40% better on the test. They put it in the output channel, completing the closure, the cycle in the brain. So, when you write down a commitment, it can produce a tenfold difference of follow-up. So write down your commitment to complete your book. Neuroscience teaches that the brain works like a travel agent. Remember back in the day when there were actual travel agents? First two questions. Where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? So program your brain to complete the book by a chosen date. How much do you want to tell and sell your story? One unknown at the time author had a collection of heartwarming stories that he thought would make a good book. He shopped his idea to every publisher he could find. No success. He shopped it to 141 publishers in all and was rejected by each. I heard him in person tell this story. He believed in the book, though, but he was told repeatedly that it would not appeal to audiences. He decided to publish it himself and began selling it out of the back of his car. It had a really unlikely title, Chicken Soup for the Soul. Jack Canfield has since sold over 1.7 billion books. So, how do you write a book? Some of you have heard this story. Consider a related question. How do you find a yellow Jeep? A group of executives asked me to present a seminar to them on writing a first book. The first thing I ask, have any of you in the last month seen a yellow Jeep? Of the 24 people there, one person raised his hand. I then went through a visualization exercise with them. Let's do it now. mute. So simply close your eyes. Take a deep breath to breathe in relaxation. Breathe out any tension. Visualize a yellow Jeep. The specific detail of how it looks. Walk toward it. Then walk all the way around it. Look at the tires, the body, the trim. Notice the grille and the headlights. As you walk back to the driver's door, reach out and grab the handle and feel how cool and firm it feels. As you open the door, look at the seat and the dash. As you sit, notice how firmly the seat holds you. Grab the wheel, look through the windshield as if you're driving. Notice the smell of the Jeep. As you turn it on, listen to the sound of the motor. Feel the vibration. Grab the steering wheel again and imagine driving it. Now, as you get out and close the door, listen for how firmly that closure sounds. As you walk away, turn back one more time and look again at the yellow Jeep. Take the entire image of it in. Now, open your eyes. See what happens in the next week. I ask the group of executives to let me know if they happen to see a yellow Jeep in the next week. In the first 3 days, 22 of them called or emailed that they'd spotted a yellow Jeep. Now, what happened is that when we envision something, we code it on our radar to be able to perceive it. Our brains can't tell the difference between what we actually take in our optic nerve and what we envision. And the process of creating that vision again and again will etch it to be a permanent change of the brain. But just cueing the possibility allows us then to perceive something that we didn't see before. Once you genuinely see yourself completing your book, all sorts of things begin to happen. You've already coded your radar for writing your book, including listening right now. We're going to discuss how to evolve that vision. So here's an exercise on choice. And this exercise is based on the principle that it takes just as much energy to construct a negative belief as it does to construct a positive belief. Now, do this exercise with me. It may feel a little goofy, but do it anyhow. I'd like, and remember, we're on mute so you can freely talk and not have to worry. I'd like you to say out loud two things that you can't do. For example, I can't finish this article I'm writing. I can't get the clutter out of my office. Two things immediately that come to mind that you can't do. Now, I'd like you to restate each, but substitute won't for can't. I won't finish this article I'm writing. I won't get the clutter out of my office. Say that out loud. That introduces the possibility of choice architecture. That if you decide you can or can't, that's a choice of this moment. Whatever we think and feel and experience, we create each moment. Now, I'd like you, as a third step here, I'd like you to say this sentence out loud three times. I am always free to change my mind. Out loud now, three times. Now you're aware of choice. That's exactly what we coach toward with our clients, to convert a period into a comma, to look at possibility, to look at challenge. All we ever have to do in life, anyhow, is just the next right thing. So once you began thinking about your specific book, you began to hear things in different ways. You coded your radar. you'll begin to hear examples. You'll begin to think about stories. An incident will become a vignette. Ideas will begin to crystallize. You think about what you want to say and become aware of how you want to say it. You'll probably become an even better listener, which makes you a better speaker. Now, a caveat here, speaking of having a system, no one ever sat down to write a book. If you do, you fail. You sit down to write a few sentences, maybe a page. Mozart never sat down to write an opera. He had a medley in his head and let it speak to him again and again until the story of the music emerged. Speaking of perseverance, the most important thing about a goal is having one. The most important thing about a plan is to have one and to stick with it. Wisdom is to know the right path. Integrity is to take it. A clearly defined goal can capture imagination and inspire passion. It can cut through the fog like a beacon in the night. One extra degree of effort in business and in life separates the good from the great. 51 publishers turned down Richard Bach's Jonathan Livingston Seagull. He took it to number 52. To get what you've never had, you'll probably have to do what you've never done. Lord Eliot put it very simply, perseverance is not a long race, it's many short races, one after the other. So, here are some guiding questions to clarify before you start writing. What do you want to write? What do you want to gain? And who do you want to reach? So, here are some reflections to begin your first book, before you begin your first chapter. There are seven. These are in your outline. One, write for a specific audience. You may want everybody to read it, but remember how in the beginning you wanted to coach everyone, and it felt like an amputation to nail it down to a specific niche until it paid off to do it? Envision your audience. Create a persona for the two or three prototypes of those you'll write for. Speak directly to them. Write a focused, compelling, understandable, and enjoyable conversation. You're having a conversation with your reader. Think about what is your aha, your good news that you want to include and guide you in what you're doing. What will your book do uniquely well? You may want to reach out and get opinion and input from others, not maybe just for research, but opinion molders, feedback, focus groups. One of the most useful things that I did back at the beginning was to be in writers' groups. A couple of times at University of Iowa, writers' workshop, a local group that met at a library that we would read each other's stuff and listen to our stuff, our passage being read by somebody else, and then do the critique of it. And the interesting thing about that is you can't tell somebody, oh, wait, you need to pause it, kind of soften your voice. No. Once you publish something, you're not going to be in charge of how somebody's going to read it. So that's a good practice to think about. I'll share a personal experience from that was pivotal for me in case it might be helpful. I was at the time writing my first non-professional book at the time when I was a psychiatrist, psychoanalyst. It was Making Memories, Reflections on Parenting from the Heart of a Father and the Mind of a Psychoanalyst. I went to the Iowa Summer Writers Workshop and shared with my group my dilemma. I was still practicing analysis at the time, but I wanted to write from my heart. I needed to give examples from my experiences as a parent, because that's what I wrote it for. This was my therapy, because it was, I began it like a year and a half before my oldest, my son, left, and finished it about a year, year and a half after my daughter, my youngest, left. That was my therapy of saying goodbye to them for the thing that had been most important in my life of being a parent. And as a sidebar here, the context is psychoanalysts think they have to remain anonymous to be a blank screen onto which the patient projects himself or herself. So my feedback was immensely useful from the conductor of the workshop and the people. When you're writing, you're not an analyst. You're not a father. You're an author. So do what your subtitle says. Write from your heart and your mind. You're thinking and feeling a book into existence. Then you'll craft it into a powerful message with a memorable story. What you imagine guides your endeavor. You learn what your book is about by thinking and writing it. And finally, you get your book done well by willing yourself to plan, organize, think, revise, and tolerate confusion and uncertainty. The principle, do whatever it takes. So think about how you want to develop the ideas, what kind of way that you want to create a system and a structure to write, how you can get into a state of mind that is creative and sustain that focus, that flow throughout your time of writing. We're going to return to each of these and say a good deal more about creating a system, but this is kind of the overview. So you just want right now to cue your radar to what can help you sustain your focus and flow and what's distracting from that, and to do everything possible to frame your space and your time in a way that you can do your optimum work. And this needs some elaboration. We're going to come back to it more in the craft. So let's look at the who, what, where, when, and how of writing. Who? Who is it that you write for? Your most authentic answer is yourself. When you speak in writing, you do so to an intended audience. Who's your audience? If you can, identify specifically the audience you'll address. The more specifically you envision the reader, the more specifically and meaningfully you'll be able to speak. I'm a talker, as you would have never guessed, and my way of writing and everything I've written, every book, every white paper, even complex emails, I speak. I am envisioning an audience, and I speak to them, because that is my most productive and creative way. Now, I happen to have a digital dictation device everywhere I may sit down or have an idea, and I simply turn it on. I can pause and think and look out at whatever my landscape is and stay focused, and I just simply upload it to idictate.com, and they send back within that day a completed transcript or completed document transcribing everything I had on the device. Now, some of you may be more visual and you may work at a computer and like to see the words manifest on the screen. There are various. We're going to return to styles and that sort of thing. One strategy is to envision a persona, a characterization of your ideal reader. Develop that persona fully. Who the person is, location, age, occupation, marital, family status. By the time you've developed two or three ideal personas of your intended audience, you have an idea who it is you'll be speaking to. Your conversation comes alive as you talk to them. And I don't do, you're going to find out more about me than you ever wanted to know. I don't do personas, but I do different groups of people or individuals. I'm always talking to somebody when I'm writing. And that keeps it alive and creative and in that flow of conversation, which is where my most natural, non-convoluted writing comes. So make it easy to connect. Create a conversation. Create a community. That community may be, you know, people around you. It may be in your head. It may be a single person. The what? You have to respect the marketplace. Be attuned to needs. Provide answers. Know what your intended audience's primary challenges are so you can speak to them. Make your approaches to answers accessible. Be attuned to what somebody wants and needs, their primary challenges. That's really the purpose of a niche, after all, is to know as much as possible about the person you want to connect to, and writing is the same deal. So beyond that, you have to be true to your own story. Who you are is your gift to your readers, and writing is not a special language or a gift you were born with. Writing is thinking on paper. Anyone who thinks clearly should be able to write clearly, because a lot of writing is editing. We're going to return to that. So here's a what exercise. And you may want to pause and listen to this when you can write, or just write down your first impression with each of these half dozen questions. So as you think and write about your idea before you begin to write about it, it kind of frames things. How will you move from current vague idea to a rich three-dimensional book? So think about what you will write along these lines. Jot down just a word or two or a short three-word phrase as I ask the question. Your first response will be from your midbrain. It will be more emotional before you move it to your left prefrontal cortex and make it reasonable and logical and kind. Write down your first impression. What are you trying to communicate? What form should your book take? And this is a little more complex, maybe for later. What chapters should it be divided into? Just think about maybe a number. And then, as you do that and revisit this, what should go into each chapter? What will you draw from your experiences to enhance the book? How will you tell stories? Some may be your own, not to distract or to be revealing, but only if you illustrate or amplify a point by telling a story. And the story can be any number of stories. I would say begin to collect stories because they can best illustrate various points that you make. Any of you have read anything about what I've written, every one is a story. The book that I published in 2019 was really a series of white papers for coaches that just tells a bunch of stories, mostly about coaching and from other people. It's called Engaging the Ineffable, Toward Mindfulness and Meaning. And it's really a book about stories. What research would you do to deepen the quality? You're not in the business of finding readers for your words. You're in the business of finding words for your readers. This is the process that writers don't usually report, and you don't usually see the thinking part, the preparation. If a writer's interview, they say their book just comes out or just came to them, it does not happen in that way. Writing is creative pleasure, but it's also work. The only thing harder than writing is rewriting. Where? Decide where you'll write. Virginia Woolf emphasized the importance of having a room of one's own. Get your space ready. Protect it from intrusions and noise and distractions. Maybe put one or two things in there to represent your commitment to writing. During the time that you commit to write, this is part of the system, and we'll return to that, protect that space and time from intrusions. Unplug your telephone. You can have voicemail. Take care of that. There are few true emergencies in life. Talking to your buddy about what happened last night on Bachelor is not one of them, at least not during your writing time. Guard your writing time to allow full immersion. Protect your time because you'll have to pay for every yes with at least one no. When? Make an appointment with yourself. Choose a schedule for writing that you'll be loyal to no matter what. That schedule will be what days and times during the week on a regular basis that your appointment with yourself for writing. This is something those of you who have trained with me as wellness coaches know that is the same way to approach working out. Henry Lodge Jr., author of the perennial bestseller, Younger Next Year, said, once you have a mindset and a framework for exercise, and everybody after 50 needs to do it 6 times a week and under that 4 times a week, when you have a scheduled time, then you treat it like work. You get up every day, you go to work, you don't debate about whether you do it or not. You don't feel virtuous if you do it. You do it. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 5 days a week, so I'm working out. One day, Saturday afternoon, I'm running in a different play. I'm running at my ranch. So create a schedule, and that way you don't have to decide. You don't have to find time. It's just something you do. And you don't ultimately like working out or like going to work. You probably will begin to feel like something's missing if you don't keep that appointment with yourself for writing. Now, it may not be as frequent as work or as working out, but it's important to have a system. So everyone on earth has one thing in common. Our choices define us. Those who provide service to others, such as authors, money managers, therapists, leaders, teachers, coaches, especially parents, have their answers counted many times. What will yours be? Make it matter. Determine when you'll write. Decide what time of day you write best. Know your biorhythms. Think about when you're most creative. Consider what may be a natural time to write and when you most have the inclination to do things like editing. Writing and editing, two different states of mind, and probably best not combined. So decide when to do each. When I had a full psychoanalytic practice and saw a dozen people every day, people would ask me when I found time to write. My answer was, to very nicely and kindly say, I never found time to write. I created time. I grew up on a farm and ranch and got up before the sun to feed cattle. Rising early was still natural to me, still is. So during all of my years of parenting, I got up early on Saturday and Sunday mornings and had 2 or 3 hours to write before my kids woke up. By then, I was fully ready to turn off and roll on the carpet with them. Again, during their late adolescence, I would be totally available to them in order to be rendered insignificant, so I had more writing time. Now, perhaps the most literate answer to the when question was offered over 900 years ago by Rashi, the great Torah commentator, who said, whatever you can do or dream you can do, begin it. Just start writing. Start simple. Start slow. Start now. How? Recognize your natural style of writing. Are you visual, auditory, or kinesthetic? Respect that style as you write. If you do it visually at a keyboard, you can see the words on the screen. If you're primarily an audio person, use a dictation device. There are a lot of possibilities here, but think if you're kinesthetic, you may want a yellow pad and write on that. And like one of my favorite authors of all time, Pat Conroy, every book he he wrote. He wrote on a yellow pad. If you do a yellow pad, get the ones with the really thick backs, because that makes you a better writer, I think. Consider also your work and performance styles. Those elements aren't talked about as much, but I think they're really important. And we don't have time really to spend time on that here, but look at my website, Mentor Path. Under the articles tab, there's a brief white paper called Toward Brain Hardware Optimization. And it has a brief overview of work and performance style. So one suggestion, whenever you have an idea, even if it doesn't come during your specified writing time, write it down. Capture it. Get it into typed form at some point. Research on memory tells us a new idea or fact lasts an average of 40 seconds in short-term memory unless you write it down to review, and then it's gone. Haven't you had the experience of thinking of a great phrase, a really catchy way to something, and think, I'm going to remember this, and later you don't? One principle we know from coaching, when people are asked what they intend to do, they're more likely to act according to how they answer. Your commitment to yourself. Write down your who, what, where, when, and how. Specifically address your intention and plan. Make appointments with yourself and keep them with the same loyalty that you do an appointment with your doctor or dentist or accountant. Writing doesn't come about through inspiration. It happens when you decide to sit down and write. Clarissa Pinkola Estes said, "To be ourselves causes us to be exiled by many others, and yet to comply with what others want causes us to be exiled from ourselves." A simple coaching version of that: for every yes, you have to pay for with at least one no. So, on creativity, this is a natural, innate energy inside each of us. We have to frame that in a state of mind of being totally present and centered to access it. It's a natural part of our life, and especially useful when we know how to access it and sustain it. So as you begin the process of your book, don't compare your inside to somebody else's outside. It's never an apples-to-apples completion. Somebody else's outside may be a complete book, and when you pick up the book to read it, it'll seem daunting. You think, man, I could never do that. Well, that author never did that. That author sat down, wrote maybe 250 words, maybe did it one day, every day, for a year. So she had a rough draft of 365 pages. That's a beginning. A great deal of thinking and a great deal of reading are required to write a book. Think about this. When writers discuss their books after they're published, they don't talk about all that. They omit or minimize the amount of work and the doubt that goes into the completion of it. We call this a nostalgia bias. Nostalgia is remembering not as it was, but as better than it was. Airbrushed memories set on an idealized stage. When we compare our inside, our hoped-for book, with the outside, a completed published book, we don't take into account the true scope of the work. Nobody ever sat down to write a book. You sit down to write a few sentences, or maybe a page. You sit down for an hour at your desk and stay there at the time you've decided to commit to writing, just in case some random string of words occurs to you, or some expression that you create and need to capture happens. If you don't feel creative or don't feel productive, that doesn't mean you get to go to the mall or get to go running. You stay for that hour you've committed. And some writers even set a word quota for the day, 250 words is a single double-spaced page. So here are 10 caveats for writers. 1, the most important thing about having a plan is having one. The second most important thing about a plan is sticking to it. 2, write every day. It will help you think like a writer. 3, read every day. It will help you think like a writer communicating to a reader. 4, write in a voice, and we're going to spend some time on voice, that sounds like you. Writing is a transaction between two people, you and the reader. So sound like yourself and be yourself. If you don't say, indeed, don't write it. If you don't say, one would think, then don't write it. 5, use language simply and warmly. You'll be able to make any subject clear by reducing it to good, simple, clear English. A clear, simple sentence is no accident. How you write will be how you're perceived. Your writing may be your only way to introduce yourself to someone whose business, trust, affection, or money is what you want. My wife confessed to me, we've been married 16, almost 17 years now, she confessed to me later that she fell in love with me by reading my book about parenting that I mentioned before. It was totally about me. And I decided then it was a good deal to be a writer. 7, keep the burden of clarity. Writing is about creating meaning. Writing is about crafting meaning to make it optimally useful and accessible for the reader. Plan from the beginning to keep the burden of the clarity of communication. That means clear, the 4 rules, and we'll return to this, I promise you, a number of times. From William Zinsser, The Art of Writing, the 4 rules of good writing, principles of good writing, clarity, brevity, simplicity, humanity. Have in mind, from the beginning, the end. Have the end in mind from the beginning. Edited that something better. In the film The Lookout, Lewis, a blind man, helps his mentally challenged roommate make sense of things by thinking of his day as a story. Lewis said, start at the end. Can't tell a story if you don't know where it's going. 9, take some positive action toward your goal every day, even if it's just one. At the end of the month, you'll have 30 completed actions. If you just write 2 paragraphs a day, you'll have 60 paragraphs. And that's a bunch. That's a West Texas literary term, by the way. 10, decide what you want. Believe it's possible. A belief is a filter between reality and our perception. A belief is our mind's command to the brain, the software program that determines our behavior. And we know now that beliefs can actually turn genes on or turn them off. Highlight this equation. I'm pretty sure it's in your outline. Beliefs drive behavior. Behavior drives performance. You can change your life by changing your beliefs. Our possibilities are only limited to the ones we allow ourselves to see. So here's a final story. A destitute young housewife had almost no money. Her book idea came to her when she was on a train, but she didn't have a pen, and she was too shy to ask for a pen, so she forgot some of the initial parts of the story that came to her. As she began to write, she couldn't afford a babysitter or a computer, but she had a story to tell, and she was determined to do it. She decided to write no matter what. When the first thought of what she wanted to write and didn't have a pen, she knew that she would capture that somehow. As soon as she started writing, her mother died at age 45 from multiple sclerosis. Her marriage to an abusive husband ended in a divorce. Just after that, she had a miscarriage. And after that, she got fired from her job and lived on government welfare. She took her baby to a coffee shop in the middle of the afternoon and began doing that every afternoon and wrote on a legal pad while her baby napped. She did that every day for 4 years. And then after significant work, she finally found a publisher for Harry Potter. And her last book not last now, but her one of her last books sold 11 million copies in the first hour, the record for all of history, and she has become the first billionaire author. So here's what I want you to do. This is an exercise, and I would suggest, still while it's fresh, do it in the next 24 hours. I'd like to suggest that you do two things. Just write them down now. Come back to it when you're fresh and when you want to devote just a few minutes to it. Sketch two things. One, doesn't have to be, this is just a sketch. Nobody's going to see it but you. One, the cover of your book with the title, subtitle, and your name. And two, sketch that book on a shelf at a bricks and mortar bookstore, like a Barnes and Noble or a local independent, or on a table at the back of the room where you present. Sketch that book in its place where others will see it. Okay, we're in discussion mode now. We have just a few minutes. Thoughts or questions or anything that might be helpful for us to talk about, or any clarifications first of anything I said? Anyone? Clarifications, questions? What are you taking away that's most important to you? Can you say that in a phrase or a sentence, anyone?
This is Tomiko. I do have
Please.
A question.
Okay.
You said to come up with a title and subtitle that will sell. What are the bullet points of knowing what a good title or subtitle is?
Okay, we're going to talk about those and the neuroscience behind it and the marketing
okay.
behind it. But right now, I just want you to shoot from the hip to write your title.
Okay.
And the subtitle, mainly I want you to get it in your output channel and to visualize it
mm-hmm.
as well. The output channel was to write it, and the visual channel was to sketch it. So that makes it real in two dimensions, and we'll talk about how to do the refining, because you can't create and edit at the same time.
Okay. And my second question is, what are the different forms that you're referring to when you say to think about the form?
We're going to talk about that as we talk about a book outline and look
okay.
more at the craft next time. So we're going to develop that fully. And I want
okay.
to get to that. You mute, please. There's some techno static if
okay.
you would mute.
Thank you.
What's the major thing, any of you, what's the major thing you're taking away from this for you from our first seminar? Whoever is please mute. I can go on mute, but okay. Thank you. Thing you're taking away,
Hi.
Anyone?
Hi, this is Katie again.
Yes.
I talked at the beginning. I think for me the biggest takeaway was that you just need to sit down and write, and that a lot of the ideas for the book come from just writing and figuring out, like, who is it that you're talking to? What is the purpose of the message of the book?
If you're on a cell phone or a computer phone. I put us on presentation mode. I really need a management of whatever's happening there with the technostatic. That is most likely a cell phone or a computer phone interfacing with the bridge line. We're really out of time. I appreciate your responses. I thank you for the responses you've sent to me. And please, if you haven't, I'm very interested in the answers to those couple of questions about what you'd really like to focus on, the biggest question you have about this topic, and what you'd like to take away from our discussion in these seminars. It will help inform some of my discussion, and we'll get to those questions and interests that you have in some form in the discussion. So thanks very, very much. I appreciate your energy and effort, the responses I have and hope to get. So take good care of yourselves, and we'll pick up right here next time. The recording will be posted by tomorrow at that site, the link that you have. So thanks very, very much. Bye now.